Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, it's my pleasure to have as my guest, Matt Forrest, who I think many of you may know from is very prolific on LinkedIn, has a widely read GIS newsletter. But today we're here also to discuss the company he works for, which is Whereabouts, who specialize in cloud-native spatial ETL. So we're going to dive into all of that, what exactly that is. I think it should be a good conversation, not least because Matt also has his own geo podcast. So we bring some veteran geo podcasting talent here to the discussion. Matt, welcome to the show. Great to have you here. Introduce yourself briefly.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And, you know, like you said, I know the level of effort it takes to put a podcast together. So, thanks for taking the time to have me on. I'm Matt. I work at Whereabouts, and I talk a lot about, you know, GIS and geospatial kind of on the internet. And you know, that's kind of been something that's evolved over time. I got my start in geo, you know, from college. I ended up kind of in the geography program. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do when I got to school. I kind of had some ideas, and then, you know, I was fortunate enough to, you know, kind of get directed by an advisor down to the geography department at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And it kind of stuck, obviously. So, you know, I was able to, you know, kind of take my courses there. I was kind of had a couple different concentrations, but I took a lot of the kind of heavy cartography at the time and some interactive elements in like GIS, right? So, I learned that and came out kind of as most people do with, you know, kind of knowing some different tools, some Esri, ArcGIS, that type of stuff, very little programming. And then as I went out to the workspace, you know, I kind of wanted to keep doing this stuff. I graduated kind of in and around the 2008 recession. So it was kind of get whatever job you can and go for it. So, I was still doing some stuff on the side. Eventually made my way to New York, in 2011. And then, you know, here I was fortunate enough to meet some people, much like, these, you know, events and meetups. There was one called GeoNYC at the time, which ran for many years and we're actually relaunching here in a couple of weeks. But, it was an event where just lots of people got together and started talking about this stuff. And I kind of realized, you know, I could either kind of keep going in the route I was or kind of jump in and try to figure out all this, you know, more technical side of GIS and geospatial. So over my career, that's kind of what I've done. I've kind of figured out these different things. And eventually, I was at my previous job at Cardo, I was leading a team. I really enjoyed kind of helping people learn the same things I learned. So I started sharing it online to see if anyone else was interested. And that's kind of how the whole LinkedIn and then YouTube and newsletter and all that got started. And eventually kind of what I found, the thing I really like to do is work really heavily with the data and on data processing, scaling that up, doing, you know, larger, trying to figure out ways to do that to help kind of lots of other different use cases in geospatial. And that led me to Whereabouts, where I am today. And that's really what we focus on is creating that, cloud native processing that's really focused on geospatial as a first-class data type and doing everything from all layers of the kind of cloud stack, from the compute to the storage, all these different things to create the most efficient, spatially intelligent cloud, as we call it. So that's kind of the condensed story from, 2006 to today. So,
okay, Matt, well, you're in the right place because I do love a good geodata geek out. So we're going to go deep on that. So, so what exactly is Whereabouts in the sense of like, who is the customer? What is the service that you're providing?
Yeah, I think, to answer that question, you can, with another origin story, the two people that founded Whereabouts, Mo and Gia, they're both professors at Arizona State, kind of working on large-scale geospatial computing problems, and they took over this project called.
Can I interrupt you? What my first question? What is large scale? What is, because I often deal with people that are like, oh, I have a lot of data, and people's perceptions of what a lot is so vastly different. So yes. For you, what is large scale?
I look at it on a couple of different like vectors, if you will, no pun intended. Number of rows, if you're looking at vector data, is one measure of that. Complexity of a geometry is another. So even though there might be, you know, there aren't a lot of geometries, the complexity of them might be difficult. Like the FEMA floodplains in the United States are a good example of that. They're incredibly complex and detailed because they have to be. I think another good example of that is raster data, looking at, you know, not just, you know, over area, but granularity and time, right? All those different things kind of measure from that. So I look at it from a perspective of, is it just a large number of rows? Because that can be one problem. Is the shape of the geometry incredibly complex and what's the difficulty there? Or is it looking at, you know, an expanse over time? So, you know, if I had to put like, it's hard to put a number on that. But let's say I wanted to figure out what floodplain in the United States, every building from the Overture Maps data set fell within and wanted to do that spatial join. That's a very simple illustration of that. That would be a large scale computing problem to me.
I agree. That's a large scale problem. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So now we've got the problem. Okay. So how does Whereabouts help me solve that?
Yep. So Mo and Gia took over this project called GeoSpark, which was a spatial extension to the Apache Spark ecosystem, which is distributed computing. So basically takes apart the computing problem, splits it into parts, and then allows you to do that in a distributed manner. That eventually became Apache Sedona. So it's a very well-used project. There's over 52 million downloads of Sedona, and it basically still acts as a spatial extension for the Spark ecosystem. And it's used across anywhere Spark is used. So, you know, that's just the open source implementation of Spark. Tools like Databricks or AWS EMR are good examples of Spark systems, as well as other places like Snowflake and things like that. So it's well used all over the place. And they basically decided that, you know, there was one problem that wasn't really solved well within all of that, which is actually at the compute level. So when I mentioned Spark, it takes these little things called compute nodes and makes many of them, and that does this distributed problem. The problem is these are just generic compute nodes. You know, like when I say compute, think of like an EC2 instance or something like that. And it doesn't understand anything spatial. So that was the first problem to solve, was to figure it out at that level. There's been multiple other pieces that have stacked up to that. But basically, the goal is to, and what they've done is, compared to a normal Spark implementation, Whereabouts can be 20 to 60 times more efficient, either, you know, faster or larger scale or anything like that. So it decreases the barrier to entry to geospatial, which is a lot of the times that I see organizations trying to implement it. It's not that they can't write the code to do it. It's that it's, how do I do that efficiently at scale, not, you know, run up a massive bill, stuff like that. So it's trying to create that as in the most efficient way possible. And then also add in other pieces, like we're adding in tools to do, you know, raster processing to create, you know, mosaics more efficiently and at scale, and, you know, things like that. Building layers that can be used in, you know, AI models and all these different pieces. So it's basically the most efficient cloud system for processing spatial data. And that's the goal of what we want to do.
And the people typically using this, the engineers who are interacting with this, they typically are just general software developers, and you're giving them the geospatial tools, or they have geospatial knowledge and you're just, you know, you've already got it all optimized and ready to go for them.
It's both. You know, there's definitely people coming from, you know, inside of the geo world that are like, you know, maybe they had built infrastructure on PostGIS and it was starting to, you know, get fragile, you know, or just too costly to maintain. Maybe they were doing all this stuff and like trying to push it through GDAL and running, you know, jobs over hours or days or stuff like that. You know, or on the other side, maybe they were, you know, they wanted to add in spatial features. They're like a machine learning engineer and they are bringing in spatial features that they can now add in a little bit more efficiently. You know, I think things like spatial joins, like a point in polygon, they're increasingly becoming easier across lots of different systems. But let's say you suddenly want to do, you know, zonal stats across like elevation data. you know, that's a really useful thing to understand across anything like real estate or planning. You name the things to do that you could use that for. But to, you know, a normal data engineer working in, you know, the stack that they use, adding in raster data is like, okay, how do I do that? You know, and it's a whole different thing than what they normally do. So it's both of those different kind of profiles that are coming in and using it.
And you provide these kind of standard data sets like elevation or something that I can just easily drop in, or I have to bring that data?
So you have to bring it. Either you have it, or what's most important, I think, is that we can easily connect to anything that's on like cloud storage. So anything on like the AWS like open data sets that are just out there. Landsat, there's elevation data sets, there's weather data sets, there's vector data sets, anything like that that's just available on a cloud bucket, you can connect to it remotely, and there's no like, you don't have to transfer the data ever. You are reading from that remote service, which is the whole point of cloud native, is to like leave data where it sits and just pull in what you need. And that's another optimization we made, is to say, you know, because the compute can understand a bounding box, for example, it can say, oh, I only need this data here, or I only need these pixels. So I only take what I need and then process that. And then that data never moves from that point on.
That's a very good point, because is that kind of your go-to definition for the term cloud native? I see that term; it's become a very hot term, but I always feel like different people might be implying slightly different things. Is that exactly what you mean by cloud native? That all the data is already sitting out there across the internet in all these different data stores, and I can just kind of point to them and say, "Okay, grab the chunk that I need." Is that?
Yep, that's actually very well put. I'm a part of the Cloud Native Geospatial Editorial Board, so the CNG Foundation, and that's one like big hurdle that it's like, oh, cloud means I have to run in the cloud. If you're a user, right? The actual like the it's actually on the data provider to put it in the cloud and put it into cloud native formats. That's really what they need to do. And then you as the user, and I think there's still some things that we have to do to make this easier for lots of users. So basically say, oh, I can pull this data set, but specifically a piece of it, right? Now, if you go all the way down to like, if you're in QGIS, right? You're working at a very specific small area, right? I know something like this where you're like, I just want to grab buildings in this small neighborhood in London, right? And maybe that's a couple thousand buildings, maybe even a couple hundred, right? But I want to pull it from Overture Maps, which has billions of buildings. Right. How do I do that efficiently? That becomes a very daunting problem. But with Cloud Native, the actual process of pulling that in becomes much more efficient. It's just, I think there's still some ways that we need to do to set that up and make that really seamless to pull that in. But that's the same process you can use today in GeoPandas, in Apache Sedona, even in, you know, other systems like DuckDB and stuff like that. Basically allows you to leave massive data sets where they are and filter efficiently to only the things that you care about.
So first of all, I can confirm, as someone who's been, you know, working with large amounts of data for 20 plus years, it is a bit overwhelming, all these new platforms and all these new names and acronyms. I mean, not just in the geospatial space, but in, let's say, databases in general. It can be a bit much at times, even trying to understand the difference between all the different tools and what they imply and what the limitations are and what the, I guess, the benefits are of all these different systems. And so in that regard, do you see the people making the switch to tools like Werabots? Is this typically new projects that are coming online and they say, okay, let's try doing the new way? Or is it more, do you see big organizations increasingly making the switch to make this kind of the default and bringing over all their kind of legacy processing and stuff like that?
It's certainly both. I mean, I would say our customers fall into three big groups, right?
Yeah, who are they?
Yeah, the first is people that already use Apache Sedona. Like I said, there's 52 plus million, you know, downloads and counting, where they're running Sedona somewhere else. And we can do that. You know, it's the same code base. You can run the same code. And it's just using a different backend system to do that. So it's basically, okay, we're faster and cheaper. And actually, you know, folks like Overture Maps actually did that. And, you know, they just as like a comparison, they're processing pipelines to run them in the same time frame. Let's say that the pipeline took 2 hours to run, right? We can do it with, you know, basically 75% less compute than the other systems. So it's that much cheaper to do it with Whereabouts compared to that. So that's an easy win, right? Just change the cloud system and I'm, you know, suddenly saving a lot of, you know, time or cost in this case, or you could optimize for doing it faster, whatever you want. So that's one group. The second group is, you know, new projects, startups. You know, we have like a startup accelerator program that, you know, allows you to come in and just basically figure out how to build on top of our platform. And, you know, we have the processing capabilities, but we also have, we've invested a lot in the Apache Iceberg ecosystem to throw another tool out there, of course. But it's basically, you know, adding a SQL table-like structure on top of just files of data. Right. So instead of it being stored in a database, it acts like a database, but it's just files like Parquet files or, you know, GeoTIFFs underneath that. So that can go into any analytics system very easily. Everyone's kind of, you know, integrating with Iceberg. It seems to be the one that's winning out. So, you know, you can take that into, you know, data warehouses like BigQuery or Snowflake or even things like, you know, different tools. And we have, you know, APIs to connect into that. So it allows these companies to have a, you know, store massive amounts of data, you know, like large global data sets, process them efficiently, and then allow their users to quickly just query the bits that they need, right? So if you imagine like a front end, exactly the problem I listed, if you just care about, you know, 100 buildings in a, you know, in a radius or a polygon you drew, Whereabouts allows you to efficiently grab just that without having to store all that data in memory in a database or something like that. That can be, you know, kind of large scale or, you know, a little bit too much volume for different systems. And then the third is those that have those problems already, but are doing them in another system. And that's always a, you know, I think it seems like a logical thing, like, oh, it's faster, it's cheaper. You can make all those cases. And it always just takes time. You know, I think like, you know, that it's always something about whenever you have a technical migration, I always think that it's like, you know, there's, you know, always the kind of thinking, well, if it isn't broke, I'm not going to fix it, right? But increasingly, if that data is growing, if it's already causing friction, stuff like that, you know, we're finding ways to take the most difficult, painful parts out, you know, that are happening in those systems and really grow from there. The other thing that was really, you know, on the people that have existing systems is adding new capabilities. So, you know, things like, you know, if they wanted to do object detection on top of, you know, satellite imagery, you know, classification, things like that. We've added tools like some of the general vision models that can, you know, so you type in car and it'll try to detect that from the imagery. So things like Owl V2 from Google, SamGeo, and we've added those in a distributed computing fashion to actually say, okay, now I can do this over large spaces. And now suddenly I have a data set of polygons for cars or planes or whatever it is you want to look at. So increasingly we're seeing that as like a net new feature that they can add into their workflows that was maybe a little bit more difficult before. So that's one big thing, is like unlocking those raster problems that maybe they weren't already working on before.
So you have kind of a menu of different models and things that I can just kind of choose from and drop into my project.
Yeah, we have some that we've brought in, but then you can also bring in a model that you want. There's a specification that we've put out there that increasingly more folks in across lots of different areas, but some, you know, national agencies in Canada, and then, you know, some different folks in academia are actually adapting their models to that specification. So it basically is like a, you know, it's like metadata for a model, right? It's the simplest way to put it, that says, you know, all these things about it, you provide it some, you know, like a PyTorch file, and then it can just run.
But as you may know, many of our listeners, GeoMob takes place in Europe, and many of our listeners are European. And a huge topic here around this is, of course, data protection and, you know, where the data. Many people are very hesitant about putting their data on, you know, third-party platforms. And how do you kind of see those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, Europe's done a great job of kind of, I think, pushing data privacy forward. And it's kind of helped here in the US because we naturally are kind of, we end up adopting those standards. Because if you ever work with anyone in Europe, you already have to, you know, play by those rules. So I think if we're talking specifically about loading data into a cloud system, right? Cloud regions are, you know, geographically, you know, specific, right? So, you know, if you're loading into US East 1, you know, specifically where that's going, and I believe it's in Virginia or something like that. But if you're loading into, I think there's a region in Ireland, it's an EU region, that data stays in the EU and you can limit who can access that geographically, and it's physically inside of the European Union, right? So there's protections against that in terms of, you know, where the data sits, who can access that. And what's unique about Whereabouts is that, you know, like both the data that you're storing, let's say you're storing that in AWS S3, maybe it's GeoTIFFs, maybe it's, you know, shapefiles, maybe it's GeoParquet, whatever that is, that never leaves that storage region. Like the data never goes out of that. We bring the compute down to the storage, and that compute can run in the same region. So the whole thing runs in that physical data center in Europe, wherever that is. So there's, you know, the big clouds, of course, have had to adapt to this as well, and they do a good job of that. We just get to basically benefit from the work that they did and leave that data where it sits from there.
I see.
I started sharing that stuff when I was, you know, I was lucky enough to lead a team of kind of like solutions engineers in my last job. And, you know, one big thing that I made a part of that was, you know, over time, I had to learn some different skills to build and do what I needed to do. So it started with initially app development. I was very interested in creating web applications. So, you know, learning JavaScript, learning things like React, how to deploy in a server, you know, run code locally, do builds, all these different things. That's where I started. Eventually, it's like, okay, now I need to store that data somewhere. That became a database. So, it was, you know, how to use PostGIS, right? Spatial SQL. Oh, you can do joins. that eventually turned into a whole book that I wrote a couple of years ago. So, you know, I learned all this stuff about spatial SQL. I could really see, oh, now I have this database that can do that. I started saying I want to do more advanced modeling and things like that. So I was looking at using spatial data science and Python to do more advanced stuff. And then eventually you need more data to go into that. So that's where the data processing bit came in and things like that. So I had to kind of figure these things out on, you know, as I went along. There was no like roadmap to do that. There's no, you know, saying, you know, here's the path, learn A, B, C, and D, and how that fits together. I still think that's a big gap in our industry. And as I really enjoyed the process of kind of teaching the folks that I was working with to help them see those same pieces, and then eventually they could do it themselves and go from there. So eventually I just started sharing that on LinkedIn. Was the first platform I started with. So I really just started posting things I learned, you know, even simple stuff like, hey, did you know GDAL is, you know, kind of integrated into, you know, Fiona, which is a Python library, which is integrated into GeoPandas at the time. I think they made some changes since then. So just simple things like that to tell people, here's how all this stuff works and fits together. I didn't know if anyone was going to be interested, but that kind of kept growing over time, and people were interested. So I kept, you know, kind of sharing and posting and doing those different things. Eventually started to post some more stuff on YouTube and you know, create some videos from that. So what I try to do is really help people do a few different things. One is understand how to actually use these tools, you know, both, you know, writing the code, how, you know, which things are important to focus in on, when to use Python, SQL, anything like that, how to use all those different pieces together. So it's kind of like, okay, how do you know, actually understand the languages, which one should you focus on when, what makes sense there? And then the biggest other piece besides that is like, how do these things fit together? Because there are so many new tools, and where do they, how do they interplay? When do you need each one? I've been creating some new videos around that just to say, okay, let's, for example, PostGIS is a video I just put out on YouTube. It's like, where, you know, when do you need it? When don't you? What does that mean for like a big enterprise versus personal projects? Like all those different questions are ones I get constantly. It's like, what should I do and how do I fit these things together? So I think that's a really important thing that we're missing. And then I would say the last bit is like, you know, taking that into career paths, right? If you want to be more of a, you know, kind of data scientist and doing those things, what should you be learning on and focusing in on? And you know, if you're are doing data engineering, which is a lot of what, you know, kind of the things we're looking at Werabots, for example, what should I learn and focus in on there? And I think that's probably like the last, you know, big horizon for our industry is that if I look at a lot of roles that get posted, job postings, it seems to be like everyone wants everything under the sun. They want a data scientist, a data engineer, a GIS analyst, someone that can do cloud architecture, and they want an all-in-one, and there's no differentiation between that job. So you don't actually know what you're doing. You have to learn everything under the sun. And I think that's actually a big problem for our industry is actually to say, how do we split those things out into individual roles and create teams of people that can do this efficiently? Because if we ask everyone to learn everything, that's going to be a really difficult thing for our space. And so, you know, that's one of the things I want to continue advocating for, not just learn the languages and the tools and stuff like that, learn how to apply them in different ways, but then actually help everyone to say, oh, what I really need is a data scientist or a cloud architect versus, you know, just, you know, a generalist. I'm just going to post that out there. So that's kind of the education pieces that I try to, you know, put out there and share.
Well, a big thank you to you, Matt. It's very needed. It's very needed. I feel like we've, especially kind of since COVID, we've hit a new wave of innovation, it feels like, in terms of all these new tools and techniques and technologies. And it's completely overwhelming, actually, at times. And as you say, it's so hard for everyone to stay on top of everything. And this is before we even get into like the AI stuff and all of that. And it is a real challenge to you know, just the tsunami of new techniques and you know, innovation. Staying on top of that is a lot of work. So, so thank you for the resources that you provide. How do you find the time, honestly? Because I mean, just doing GeoMob, like, you know, we put out a monthly newsletter, and already it's like every single month, I'm like, oh my God, can there's really time for the newsletter again?
Yeah, you know, it. In a way, sometimes I don't know. You know, it's what's really good is like a lot of what I'm doing in my day-to-day has so much applicability that I can immediately turn around and like share it, right? The stuff I'm working on, I can just talk about. And I'm really thankful, like, you know, Werabots kind of provides me that opportunity. Like my core role there is to create, you know, kind of materials for people to learn how to use the platform and embed that to make it as easy as possible to use, this kind of like natural product-led growth. So my job really is to educate and help people learn and then embed that into the product. So it's a very natural fit for people to kind of grow with it. So I'm doing a lot of those things already. And a lot of what I'm talking about or hearing and, you know, saying, you know, for example, oh, you know, I use PostGIS. Why would I switch to Sedona? Oh, well, I can kind of turn that into a video that anyone can use, you know, and kind of learn, okay, here's where PostGIS shines, and it's an amazing tool. And here's where, if you're doing large-scale data processing, you might want to consider something else. So it's a very natural kind of fit from that side. And then I've just started, like, you know, I do feel at times I'm like, there's a lot of channels to maintain, from, you know, just LinkedIn to, you know, videos on YouTube, podcast and recording and stuff like that into the newsletter. I try to, you know, there is a lot of overlap, I'm not going to lie, when I'm, you know, kind of thinking about things, but I try to kind of create some natural flows where I'm like, okay, if this, I'll use LinkedIn to say, like, you know, post something and say, is this what people are interested in? Like foundational models, like all of a sudden, boom, everyone's talking about foundational models. So I'll try to work that into, okay, now that I know there's enough interest there, maybe I'll do a YouTube short video on that just to explain what it is. And if there's enough interest on that, hey, that's enough to kind of tell me that there's, you know, interest for a video. And then is there someone that can talk about that on a podcast? And then can I roll that into a newsletter to make it very easy? So I try to, you know, kind of create some, you know, flywheels, if you will, to help as much as I can.
Just speaking from my own experience, of course, that's the dream, right? Create once and then distribute everywhere. But it's actually, you know, it's so annoyingly difficult to do that smoothly, consistently. So full credit to you. All right, Matt, let's wrap up here. What, any final thoughts about Werabots? And then also, if this has gotten people interested, what, you know, what's the best way for them to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, working on you know, geospatial products or large-scale geoprocessing, definitely check out Whereabouts. There's a community edition that you can always check out. You can get started on Apache Sedona, and there's some new tools we're releasing soon. So probably by the time people are listening to this, there'll be some new things out. So I'm going to tease that now, but take a look at that, and I'll send over the links once those are out. But there's a bunch of stuff to get started just using Sedona and using Whereabouts. And a lot of those, you know, like I said, that's kind of the core day-to-day of what I do is putting out things to help people use that. So you can go to whereabouts.com, sign up. They'll kind of get you into the system, and you'll get some, you know, more information. There's courses, all those different things. And then, yeah, if you want to, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. You can just search Matt Forrest and you should be able to find me. My website's forrest.nyc. I'm out of New York, so I was lucky enough to grab that domain when they released it.
So you can never move?
I can move. I just had to be there when I registered, which I was. Okay. Now I own the domain, and I'm just outside New York City right now, so hopefully they don't enforce some rules on that. So you can sign up for my newsletter there that I put out, you know, all my videos, podcast episodes, everything through that, so you can kind of keep up to date with that. Blog posts, everything is kind of there. So those are the two big ways to get in touch with me.
All right. Well, no shortage of content then for people to check out, and I encourage our listeners to have a look and dive in. I appreciate you coming on the show, Matt. Thanks for sharing the story with us. And hopefully you or maybe a colleague can get to a GeoMob event over in Europe at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the stuff that you guys do as well. And yeah, next time I'm over there, I'll let you know.
Bye. Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.